Washington and Pyongyang are basically on two very opposite ends of the spectrum. And I think what South Korea is trying to do here is trying to bridge the gap.
Many details to be worked out in an upcoming summit of the Koreas. It's Wednesday, August 15th. This is VOA Asia. Hello and welcome. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're also on Facebook at VOA Asia. Coming up, concerns mount for Uyghurs in China. India faces a cow crisis. Turkey and trade bring turbulence to Asian markets. Therapy donkeys and high-tech river mapping. It's all on today's VOA Asia. North Korea has repeated a call for a declaration formally ending the Korean War as a way to foster mutual trust, a requirement it said is necessary for progress on denuclearization. According to the South Korean news agency Yonhap, the state-run publication said the United States should take practical measures to implement what was agreed to June 12th in Singapore between North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and President Donald Trump. The paper also warned South Korea that continued sanctions and improving relations are incompatible. Monday's commentary followed the agreement between the Koreas for their leaders to meet for a third time this year, this time in September in Pyongyang. The demands by the North are no surprise to analyst Harry Kazianis, director of defense studies at the Center for the National Interest. He tells VOA's Victor Beatty the planned Korean summit comes at a time when the pace toward denuclearization has stalled.
Seems like the North Koreans want a lot of concessions up front before they're willing to really even talk about denuclearization, whereas the Trump administration, their starting point in negotiations was what everybody was calling a few months ago CVID. In other words, the complete, verifiable, irreversible denuclearization of North Korea. So it's very clear that Washington and Pyongyang are basically on two very opposite ends of the spectrum. And I think what South Korea is trying to do here is trying to bridge the gap. I don't know if that's going to happen, but we're going to find out pretty soon.
Who wants this meeting more, North or South Korea, or is it mutual?
I think it's mutual. I think for Moon in South Korea, you know, his popularity has dipped a little bit. The economy is starting to have a little bit of problems. For Kim Jong-un, I think it's pretty obvious that he really wants to get South Korean investment. He's looking to try and build his legacy. And he's also trying to legitimize himself in the international arena. So for both Korean leaders, I think it's obvious the reasons why they would want to meet again.
The two at their April meeting, their first summit, agreed to push for a declaration of an end to the Korean conflict, but Ambassador Harry Harris said that would be premature at this point.
You know, I don't understand the rub why so many people are against some sort of formal declaration in the Korean War. The war is over. So it's the equivalent of everybody arguing if the sky is blue. Everybody knows the sky is blue, and it's just people view it as some sort of concession on America or Seoul's part, saying that the war is over. I think that's a good thing. I think it wouldn't be a bad idea if President Moon, Donald Trump, or Kim Jong-un maybe even met, you know, at this potential third Korean summit and ended the war. I think that would be a good way to test North Korea's intentions, because quite frankly, for many years, that has been something they have been asking for. I don't think there's any harm in doing that. And I think at that point, you could honestly go to Kim Jong-un and say, look, we've given you three meetings with Mike Pompeo. We've given you a summit with Donald Trump. Now we're ending the Korean War. Where's your turn in terms of doing what you said you would do and work towards denuclearization? If at that point they still won't talk about denuclearization, I think not only you have the international community on your side to contain North Korea, you have really the entire world on Donald Trump's side. So I think this is something that we can do.
Are you surprised at the lack of forward motion on denuclearization?
No, I'm not surprised. I mean, the North Koreans have been very clear in a lot of their public statements that denuclearization is almost an aspirational goal for them. The things they want up front before they were denuclearized that they've said in sometimes in very full-throated ways, in some ways sort of vaguely, is that they want the Korean War to be ended. They want to see some of the sanctions removed. You know, they're looking to be legitimized in the international arena as a legitimate nation.
Meanwhile, Yonhap reports that a South Korean advance team heads to North Korea this week to inspect preparations for next week's planned family reunions involving 100 people from each side who have been separated since the armistice was signed to end hostilities in the Korean War in 1953. Also, planning is underway in South Korea to renew an expanded tourism tie with North Korea, contingent upon the lifting of economic sanctions that the U.S. insists will remain in place until Pyongyang dismantles its nuclear arsenal. The South Korean Incheon Port Authority on Monday announced plans to facilitate foreign cruise ship visits to both South and North Korean ports, according to the Yonhap News Service. Next year, South Korea will also open the nation's largest cruise ship terminal in Incheon. These are among some of the top Asia stories you'll find right now on voanews.com. Legislation asks Pentagon to examine more options for stopping North Korean missiles. Hong Kong independence activist says China is destroying city. South Korea marks first Comfort Women Day, joined by protests in Taiwan. Now, with power to long rule China, Xi beset by challenges. Malaysia Prime Minister on China, Rohingya, Singapore, graft, and Sea Row. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. You'll also find them by stopping by our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. China's foreign ministry Tuesday blamed anti-China forces for criticism of its handling of security in the far western Xinjiang region. Spokesman Liu Kang denounced what he called false accusations against China for political purposes. The statement came after Monday's UN assessment that at least 1 million Uyghurs may be held in internment camps as Beijing grapples with what it calls a serious threat from Islamist militants who plot attacks and stir up tensions among the mostly Muslim Uyghur minority against the ethnic Han Chinese majority. A Chinese Communist Party official called the rights report released in Geneva completely untrue, although he conceded that those deceived by religious extremism shall be assisted by resettlement and education. Gordon Cheng is an author, lawyer, and Daily Beast publication contributor. He tells VOA's Victor Beatty he has no doubt the UN report is accurate.
We have the satellite imagery. There are so many reports of this. And so clearly at this point, I think that there are a large number of Muslims who have been held in these camps for months. China, of course, is sensitive about it. What's important here is that the UN is actually looking at this. China, I think, is losing its ability to intimidate others from actually investigating these horrific human rights violations.
China insists that extremists in Xinjiang are trying to ignite secession movements, leading to assassinations, arson, and poisonings. China says it's just trying to fight crime, while Chang points to more serious actions by China in the region.
Certainly there have been violent incidents, but this is a people who have been subject to some of the most horrific abuses over decades. They have been denied religious freedom. They've been denied basic human rights. It's what happens when you have a repressive regime trying to assimilate and eliminate a religious group. So, we Americans should understand all this because we are born of a revolutionary beginning. And I think the Uyghurs are just demanding basic human rights, which have been denied for so long.
The China-run state Global Times insisted Monday that the tough measures are preventing Xinjiang from turning it into China's Syria or China's Libya, a situation that lends some credence to the rising sentiment of secession, according to Gordon Cheng.
I think it's actually become serious, but the reason is because of the repression in the past. You know, if we go back about five decades or so, people in that part of China were very quiet. And I think that essentially we have a situation where China has created opposition to itself. You have a people who are not ethnically or even racially from the same stock as the Chinese, obviously different religion, different cultures. This is a conquered people. And they've been remarkably quiet for a very long time, despite all of that. But what China has done, trying to eliminate their culture and their religion, has sparked opposition. And so this is the inevitable result of the failure of China's policies.
Gordon Cheng said it is possible to change China's policy if the world is united in opposing its heavy-handed tactics. He said for now the world is focused on other matters, But criticism from the United States and Muslim countries could have an effect. Happening now in Asia, a 67-year-old Philip Wilson, a former Australian archbishop and the most senior Catholic cleric in the world to be convicted of concealing child sex abuse, avoided jail Tuesday when he was ordered to serve his one-year sentence at home. The former archbishop is suffering from a range of health issues. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. As always, we're happy to have you with us on VOA Asia. The death in India of a 28-year-old Muslim man after he purchased two cows is the latest attack blamed on cow vigilantes. Such deadly incidents have surged since the rise to power of the BJP, emboldened fringe Hindu groups. Anjana Pasricha traveled to the victim's small Muslim-dominated village in Haryana State to find growing anger and anxiety about how such attacks will impact their traditional occupation of dairy farming.
It appears to be another quiet day in the hamlet of Kolgaon, but life will never be the same in Rakbar Khan's village after suspected cow vigilantes beat him brutally over suspicion of smuggling cows as he walked home at night with two cows he had bought in neighboring Rajasthan state. The attack proved fatal. The victim's cousin, Mohammad Akbar, says 28-year-old Khan bought the animals to supplement his meager income as a laborer and look after his seven children.
He had five cows which have stopped giving milk. He thought two more cows would provide milk for his kids and he could also sell some in the market to support his family.
For generations, families here have reared animals for dairy. The poorer residents in this economically backward village prefer to purchase cows to add to stock because they are much cheaper than buffaloes. But as this village suffers the deadly consequences of escalating assaults by cow protection groups, village elders like Fazruddin Khan say they will not dare to do so again, even though cows are their economic lifeblood. 60 kilo doodh
hove char gaye inko. Four cows give 60 kilograms of milk. People sell it, and it looks after their daily needs. But this incident has shocked us, and we will not venture out to buy cows anymore. We will leave this occupation if we have to.
The young in the village also feared that the cow is becoming a lethal purchase.
With the atmosphere around, the incidents that are happening, we don't feel like rearing cows. We are scared.
There is bewilderment among villagers as to why the cow, which Hindus consider holy, has become a polarizing animal since the BJP's rise to power. Rakbar Khan's mother-in-law, Kariman Khan, has come to console her daughter. She points out that the cow is much loved in such villages. These animals helped take care of her daughter's family.
We rear these cows with even more love than our children. We bathe them, give them water, feed them. We nurture them longer than our own kids.
Khan's death has shocked both Hindu and Muslim residents of the village, who have lived in harmony for generations.
The atmosphere here is very cordial. We neither shout slogans for Hindus or for Muslims. We are like brothers.
Prime Minister Narendra Modi has criticized cow vigilantism, but questions abound in this village about why authorities have not reined in the deadly assaults. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, Haryana.
Coming up, pressure pushes Asian financial markets. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Special English. A way to learn American English and much more. Broadcasting a half hour of world news and features every day on radio. You can also find Special English on television and online at voaspecialenglish.com. For 50 years, helping people understand world events and the language and culture of America.
This news news from VOA Asia, Indonesian civil society groups are expressing concern President Joko Widodo's choice of an influential Islamic cleric as his vice presidential running mate, seen by many observers as a smart political move, could lead to the further erosion of minority rights amid rising religious conservatism. Top stories and great features to see and share are on VOA Asia Facebook each day. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, escalating trade sanctions between the United States and China are starting to shift buying sentiments, while Turkey's economy is sending concern across Asia. These are the topics on today's VOA Asia Business Scene with Skylar Ogden.
The trade conflict between the U.S. and China shows no signs of abating. In a Reuters poll, a significant minority of residents in Beijing and Shanghai said they wanted to stop buying American products now, and many said they might do so in the future. Xu Jinjun is an engineer in the steel industry.
Americans have been arrogant for a long time. They're using original equipment manufacturers in other countries, and then they take all of the economic benefits. We think this is unreasonable.
The current mood in China stems from a long list of provocative actions taken by both sides. If the recent Reuters poll were representative of all of China, the results indicate that American businesses could suffer more hardship. Sales of Apple's iPhones, Disney's movies, Starbucks drinks, and General Motors cars could take a hit. That hit could worsen if the Chinese government or local activists were to call for a boycott of American goods, which they haven't done yet. Mr. Yin is a middle school art teacher.
I used to be more interested in American car brands, but now perhaps I'll have to give up that option.
U.S. consumers rely heavily on Chinese goods, with $500 billion worth of goods being imported every year. The Hong Kong stock market dipped 1.5% on Monday, following other markets in Asia as Turkey's economic crisis continues to worry the region. Francis Long is a Hong Kong stock analyst.
The problem is when the Turkish lira plunged, it brought down other currencies, including Asian currencies. The offshore renminbi fell to almost 6.9, and that triggered a fear that money will flow out of Asia. And that caused a big sell-off in stocks and currencies.
A country in Turkey's situation would normally raise interest rates to stop the currency slide, but President Erdogan has spoken out against raising interest rates. After the Turkish lira began to fall, investors feared contagion and began to get rid of other emerging market currencies. The Indian rupee dropped to a record low against the dollar, and the Indonesian rupiah almost came to a three-year low. Francis Lun.
Yeah, I think it's like a disease that nobody can get out of. It's like a flu. There's no cure for it. You just have to bear with it. I think I see the market falling again, maybe to the 27,000.
Analysts expect that concern over Turkey's financial turmoil will spread to other emerging markets and that the Hang Seng Index will continue to drop this week. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Skylar Ogden.
Asian stocks were largely higher Tuesday, a day after widespread regional declines following Turkey's currency crisis. Japan's Nikkei bounced back with a 2.28% increase, driven by the yen's overnight pullback. Markets in South Korea and Australia were up slightly, while China's markets posted moderate losses. This news from VOA Asia, Hong Kong independence activist Andy Chan denounced China as a modern-day colonial power in a speech before a group of foreign journalists that Beijing wanted canceled. Andy Chan, a founder of the Hong Kong National Party, said Hong Kong is quickly being annexed and destroyed by China. Much more is on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, animal-assisted therapy is a growing field that uses animals to help people recover from or better cope with health problems, such as heart disease, cancer, and mental health disorders. While the most common therapy animal is dogs, VOA's Faith Lapidus tells us the use of other creatures is on the rise.
It's been shown that petting a dog can trigger the release of the feel-good hormone oxytocin, lower your blood pressure, and help you de-stress. But so can brushing a donkey.
It calms me down, relaxes me.
That's the idea, says Steve Steyert, who owns Donkey Park.
They're great stress sponges. You can sit down in here and you know, escape your office life, your urban life. We get a lot of people come up from the city, travel long distances. And when they come out, you can just see the stress melting away from them.
The nonprofit park north of New York City is home to 9 miniature donkeys, 2 full-size donkeys, and 1 zebra donkey mix called a zonkey. The animals travel to schools and nursing homes. The small park also hosts groups like this one from a local organization that serves people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. They groom the animals, lead them through an obstacle course, and feed them hay.
Come on down here, Jarrell. They've gotten up there.
While donkeys are beasts of burden in most of the world, their only job here is to nuzzle, bray, and beguile the diverse group of people who find comfort in their company. I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Some 400 years ago, English explorer Captain John Smith traveled around the Chesapeake Bay in the eastern United States, the country's largest estuary. Smith mapped about 4,800 kilometers of the bay and nearby rivers. Now 11 of those rivers can be seen in an entirely new way through a unique virtual online tour. VOA's Deborah Block got on board a small raft in the Patuxent River, loaded with camera and computer equipment, to find out how it's done.
Here on the Patuxent River in Maryland, a tributary of the Chesapeake Bay, this one-of-a-kind raft was designed and built by Ryan Abrahamson, founder of Terrain 360, a virtual mapping company. Inspired by Google Street View, Abrahamson has created 360-degree virtual mapping tours of rivers with a view of being in a canoe. Producing a virtual river map is a challenge.
On the center column we have at the top, we have the 6 cameras. At the very top, we have a light sensor and a GPS unit. And down here at the bottom, we have a PC with an ultra-bright screen, touchscreen.
The cameras are triggered by the computer. We record at the same time GPS coordinates. We record barometric pressure, humidity, temperature.
As the raft motors along the Patuxent, the extreme wide-angle lens cameras shoot photos simultaneously every 12 meters. It takes hundreds of thousands of the high-resolution images to create the virtual panoramic waterway tour. Today, Abrahamson is adding to the Patuxent River map with the addition of 20,000 new photos taken from a cove, with all kinds of things getting captured along the way. The virtual tours of 11 of the Chesapeake Bay rivers is funded by the Chesapeake Conservancy, an environmental group, and can be viewed on their website, chesapeakeconservancy.org.
What we wanted to do was to give people the information and inspiration they needed to get outside, get on our rivers, explore the Chesapeake Bay so that they'll protect the Chesapeake Bay.
Abrahamson says while the virtual tours show the beauty of the rivers, they also reveal environmental problems.
Shoreline erosion, we collect for pollution, storm drains, we see a lot of tires in the waterways. And just by showcasing that, it gives, the general public things need to be cleaned up. We want to care more about, where we live and our environment and the waterways.
Rivers like the Patuxent and others that flow into the Chesapeake Bay are near major cities such as Washington and Baltimore, giving more people the opportunity to enjoy the Chesapeake Bay watershed.
People can use the virtual tours to plan their trips from their desk at home or at work, but they can also use them out on the water on their smartphone from wherever they are.
Today, the rivers are part of the Captain John Smith Chesapeake National Historic Trail, the first all-water historic trail in the United States. Deborah Block, VOA News, on the Patuxent River in Maryland.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can always find us streaming or download us online. You can also hear us on the radio. Many great radio stations around Asia carry our program, like the Voice of Chungrung, Star Radio FM 88.3, at Chungrung Christian University in Tainan, Taiwan. Thanks to everyone there who tuned in today. We always give our thanks to those who help us put this program on the air, Director Tracy Carter, Engineer Kelvin Fowler, Managing Editor Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and Doug Bernard. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead.